Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you, describe to you today the mechanism that we are proposing controls evaporation from soil cracks. I think if I click, there we go. First of all, a little bit of background. Studies of evaporation from soil cracks are not new. There's significant work started, and at least it's been recorded to have started in the 1940s, and with a flurry of activity continuing through the 1970s. A lot of wonderful field and laboratory data has been taken to show that evaporation from soil cracks is significantly greater, at least 50% greater than from soil that is not cracked. On the right-hand side is a sample of one of the publications, Ritchie and Adams, 1974, in which they took a 1 cubic meter lysimeter with an imposed diagonal fracture down to 50 centimeters. On the bottom of the graph is the resulting moisture content at the end of their 3-week experiment. The lines show lines of constant moisture, and you can see that there is significant drying indeed down to the bottom of their fracture system. However, during this time period, no conceptual model was put forth for the mechanism that controlled this enhanced evaporation process. And that's what I hope to do today, is to describe a possible mechanism and also to show you some field data that at least we feel somewhat convinced that this is a likely mechanism. So what we're suggesting is that there is thermal convection within the fracture system, within the cracks, that is venting the air, the moist air from the cracks, and entraining atmospheric air in the cracks. On the right-hand side is just a typical theoretical thermal soil profile, depth of about 0 to 120 centimeters, with temperature on the x-axis. There are lines for every hour for a 24-hour period of time. And what I'd like you to notice here, I realize that the numbers are too small to see, but what I'd like you to notice is that the upper 40 centimeters, there's a lot of diurnal variability of temperature at night. It's going to be colder in the surface, warmer in the subsurface during the day, warmer on the surface, colder in the subsurface. So what we're suggesting is that at night, when the surface is cooler and more dense than the subsurface, that you have convective upturning of the air within the fracture and venting of the air. And so we're suggesting that the majority of the evaporation from within the fracture is occurring at night. Whereas during the day, when it's cooler and denser below and lighter above, you have stable conditions. And so you would have diffusive venting of the fracture during the day. We're looking at two possible air instabilities that would lead to convection. One of them is Rayleigh-Bernard instability, and this is driven by the temperature gradient, hot in the bottom, cool on the top. It's characterized by the Rayleigh number. Neil published that for a high aspect ratio, such as a fracture or a crack, you would have a critical Rayleigh number of about 4 pi squared. If the Rayleigh number is greater than that, you have conditions of instability and convection could occur. The other possible instability is the Rayleigh-Taylor instability. This does not depend on a temperature gradient, but rather on a density contrast right at the atmosphere boundary with the soil crack. If we look at field data of temperature profiles, we can graph the possibility for instability. With this graph, I'll walk you through the graph. The y-axis is the Rayleigh number, actually it's the ratio of the Rayleigh number to the critical number, so anything above 1 means the situation is unstable. On the x-axis, I lost my pointer. On the x-axis is the time of day, with 0 meaning midnight at the opposite ends and noon in the middle, and the z-axis is time of year, with summer at the two extremes and winter in the middle. And you can see that the data would predict, or the equations would predict, that you would have the majority of the evaporation at night and in winter. If we look at the same data and apply the Rayleigh-Taylor, we again find the graph is oriented in the same way. We again would find that nighttime is the most likely time for instability, but this time it's most likely to occur during the summer instead of the winter. So the key message here is that theoretically we predict that convection would occur at night and that it would be seasonally dependent. So this is wonderful for a theoretical or analytical model, but now let's look at some field data. So we have a couple of field sites. One is in the Mojave Desert in California, and this one is in the Negev Desert of Israel. We selected this field site for a different project, a salinity project, but there are also a lot of advantages. You can dig a hole and it doesn't cave in. This is a chalk rock unit. There's a natural fracture that you can see right here. With a proper selection of graduate students, we dug a very big hole, placed a cement housing within it, and installed a subsurface laboratory. The instrumentation that we installed was a one-dimensional linear array of thermocouples and relative humidity probes down to a depth of 120 centimeters, a second identical array of just the thermocouples installed embedded into the rock 50 centimeters away from the fracture plane, and then a two-dimensional array of thermocouples that is 60 centimeters by 60 centimeters in the plane of the aperture itself. So with this data, we were hoping to see if convection really did occur and if it did occur on a daily basis. So I'll show you three pieces of our data set. The first one is comparing the thermal profile of the air within the fracture to the rock. And the key point here, I could spend an hour just looking at the details and analyzing the details of these wiggles in the air temperature data, but the key point here is that because of the aspect ratio, the fracture is very thin compared to its dimension, we would expect the air temperature in the fracture to mimic the temperature in the rock if there was no convection. And you can see on the rock temperature, just to orient you, the red lines are a temperature at depth of 120 centimeters, so it's warmer at depth, cooler on the surface. This is the surface probe. You can see that temperature on the rock is fairly stable. It is very much as one would predict with the theoretical equations, but when you move on to the fracture air, there's a lot of turbulence. Now, this does not say that there is convection. It does not say that it's venting, but something is disturbing the temperature profile there. The next data set comes from the relative humidity probes, and this is somewhat of a complex graph. There are two sets of data. If you will focus just on the top part, there are again 2 days worth of data, midnight, midnight, and midnight. I have highlighted the regions to orient you to day and night. The white regions are day and the blue regions are nighttime. The upper graph is the relative humidity probe at 40 centimeters, and you can see that at night, the fracture air is drier. As soon as the day arises, it recovers to 100% relative humidity. As dusk approaches, the fracture air dries out again, and again, it recovers the next day. The interesting thing is, if we focus right here, is that as dusk approaches, the fracture starts to dry out when the air density, the bottom half of the graph are air densities. The black line is the density of atmospheric air. The colored lines are the density of fracture air. As the atmospheric air density exceeds the fracture air density, the fracture starts to dry out. We could interpret this as entrainment of drier atmospheric air into the fracture system and venting of moist fracture air. Again, as the atmospheric air density decreases below the density of the fracture air, the system becomes stable and starts to recover. So this is an indication that somehow the fracture is venting. We move on to the third piece of data, and this comes from the thermal map within the fracture plane. We have quite a few months worth of movies that were taken. The temperature was taken every half hour, continuously 24-hour days for a few months. But I've selected three frames to point out. On the left-hand side, we have the temperature map at 1700 hours in the evening, and you can see that the surface is starting to cool and the thermal pulse is moving downward. 40 minutes later, two convection cells have begun to form, and there is a cooling of the central region here. By 1900 hours, there's definitely a thermal finger, a cold finger of maybe atmospheric air entering the fracture system, and we have two very well-developed convection cells. And this format continues until about 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's repeated every single day. There is a difference. There's a distinct seasonal difference, but within a season, the pattern is repeated every single day. So the key message here is that convective venting does occur within the fracture system. It does cause a drying of the moist air within the fracture, and thereby it's the most likely reason for enhancing the evaporation of the fracture system. And most importantly, the timing of the behavior matches very well with the analytical estimations. And so now what we have is a mechanism that we can analyze quantitatively for a fracture or cracked soil system. So what is the importance of the system? Why would we, you know, bother to take the time other than to be able to calculate more accurately the evaporation rate from a cracked soil? From the field data as well as our own laboratory data, we estimate that there's at least 50% enhancement in the evaporation rate from a cracked soil compared to a soil that's not cracked. At the basin scale, this is a large amount of water that is going to impact quantification of the water cycle and the water budget in the soil. In addition to that, we have entrainment of cold atmospheric air and enhanced evaporation both that are going to change the heat budget within the soil. You're going to have cooler walls to these fractured bed areas. If you have entrainment of atmospheric air, you're also enhancing the gas exchange between the atmosphere and the soil, and some of those may be greenhouse gases. And the flux of greenhouse gases from soil is a very important mechanism to understand. The fourth ecological process of importance that this could impact is the salinity distribution within the soil itself. At our field site in the Mojave Desert, we have done extensive digging of the cracked soil system, and there is a lot of salt that precipitates on the outside of PEDs, even when the cracks are filled with sediment, as well as for very, very small cracks. You will find this is a picture of one of our field sites, and you'll find that there's almost no salt on the surface, but if you dig down just a little bit on all the cracks, there's an enormous amount of salt that's been depositing. And lastly, the original funding for this project came from an aquifer salinization project, our field site in the Negev. That chalk unit happens to be the fractures within that chalk unit happen to be the recharge mechanism for the aquifer. And if you have enhanced evaporation from the fractures themselves and salt depositing on those fracture walls during the arid region, during the arid time period, then during high precipitation events, you would have that salt being flushed down straight to the aquifer. So this mechanism becomes a bypass for salinity, which is near the surface, to enter the aquifer system, even in low permeability zones. So with my last slide, I'd like to thank especially the six graduate students that have been working on the project. The two above, Uri and Modi, were responsible for the field work, and also thank the three funding agencies that have been supporting our work. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Is there a question for Maria?
In one of your graphs, you show that the air density in the top surface of the fracture is changing suddenly around, there's a notch around 6 o'clock at the sunrise. Is it this notch is it a pure accident, or does it reflect?
There is a little bit of wind in the mid-afternoon and in the early morning, and it may be related to that, but I don't remember right now what that particular notch is.
You can go back to the slide.
Do I have time to go back? No?
Yeah.
Maybe during the break?
Yeah, during the break.
All right.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
A quick question. Denny?
You said you observed 50% enhancement in evaporation. Was this rate or humidity?
I can't give you off the I made the calculation for a basin size, and I can't give you off the top of my head what a typical value of water loss would be. But 50% net enhancement in evaporation compared to an unfractured system. And this has been seen using soil lysimeters as well as in our own laboratory work. But if you compare the evaporation from the fracture due to convection compared to what it would be due to diffusion, it's about 200 times. Just counting the aerial surface of the surface.